Australia's statewide sports talk. On your radio, digital radio, the app and streaming. RSN's Breakfast with Half with Daniel Harford.
Good morning, everybody! Welcome to Breakfast on RSN. Great day for company. On a Wednesday morning, it's midweek activity. Yes, we get through this one and we're over the hump and we're downhill running to a big sporting weekend. Although the weekend, as we know, starts early these days. If you're a footy fan, it starts tomorrow night. That's correct. Tomorrow night, Thursday night footy is a thing. It's big business. We've got the Brisbane Lions travelling to Marvel Stadium to take on the Bulldogs, and there's been a bit of feedback for the Bulldogs camp in the papers today. Well, copped a bit of feedback in the last couple of weeks from their performances. It's intensifying the conversation around the Western Bulldogs. We'll talk about that through the morning. We've got a busy show coming up. Isaac Smith is not a Bulldog. He's a Cat. And he's a fine Cat. Four-time premiership star. Three of those with the Mighty Hawks, of course. Last year, dominant force with the Cats against the Sydney Swans. He's the reigning Norm Smith medalist, and he's going to join us a little bit later on this morning. The Cats are just a little bit scratchy, just scratching around the kitty litter at the moment. We'll see what he's got for us today, Isaac, a little bit later on. David Noble is going to jump on the line shortly. In fact, he's got a breakfast this morning. He's up and about. He's got a big weekend of racing coming up at Albert Park. He's the CEO of Dick Johnson Racing, of course, these days. Former North Melbourne coach, though, was on 360 last night talking about all that and everything else. Keen to chat to Nobes about how he's tracking and this new world he's in and what it means and what it looks like and where it goes, I suppose, too. David Sinclair is going to jump on the line. He's the Ovens and Murray Football League chair. Now, yesterday we learned that Wangaratta Magpies were sensationally stripped of their premiership for 2022. Now, country footy is in the news for all the wrong reasons in the last couple of months. Teams unable to field sides or clubs unable to field sides. Now we've got this sort of stuff going on the back of salary cap breaches, which of course has come into local footy in the last couple of years, the point system as well. I wouldn't mind finding out the temperature from local football, and particularly country football people out there, about how that's working, the whole salary cap points system in local football. We'll get some feedback about that through the morning, I reckon. Peter Moores, not Darcy's dad, there's an S on the end. He is the Melbourne Stars coach, the new Melbourne Stars coach in the Big Bash. Of course, he coached England to a couple of World Cup campaigns and the one-day internationals. He's going to be coming to town to take over the green team in Melbourne as part of the Big Bash. We'll have a chat to him. Hopefully touch base with Matty Stewart on the news from Blake Shin last night. That there's been a swab irregularity for him on the remnants of a sleeping tablet, we believe. So that's what he released last night. We'll talk more about that through the morning, but Matty will give us the lowdown on that. Mark Stevens with all the latest footy news, The Apprentice with the poll this morning, and The Owl floating around with all the latest sports news as well, and there's been a bit of that in the last 24 hours or so. And of course, we encourage you to get involved. 1-300-652-927 is the number to call. 0416 90 50 52 via the SMS. You can tweet us at Breakfast with Half or RSN927 as well through the morning. And we'll be able to get a hold of you that way. You can get a hold of us that way. And we can communicate as effectively as humanly possible in those realms. So that's the opportunity today. There's been a bit going on, of course, with the Socceroos last night. Some big stories in the paper today. Peter Boll has got some... the world's sort of turned in his favour a little bit, although I wonder the damage done to his reputation. There's been some independent testing done, as you heard from Johnny Bowden in the news. He's going to be on the Today Show a little bit later on, so we might try and get a piece of Pete's action there, because that's a big story in world athletics. Of course, the national champs, I think, start today or tomorrow for the national championships in Brisbane. He was going to be the first one to win the 800 metres four times from an Australian sporting perspective. So I wonder if that timing is intentional or not. We will see about that. But let's get to the Owl and find out what he's got for us after a big day in the world of sport. Good morning to you, Owl.
Yes, good morning, Daniel. Good morning, all. Happy hump day.
Happy hump day to you. Of course, that means the RSN Multi's on today too.
Yes.
And we've selected our charges today. We're ready to send three to the post as quickly as possible and get the RSN Multi up.
I've got a feeling one of mine might be part of the early mail too, so extra pressure.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, let's start with Peter Boll. And as you alluded to, two independent labs have cleared Peter Bowl of ever using the banned substance EPO in a development his US-based lawyer Paul Green says has highlighted catastrophic blunders by Sports Integrity Australia. Bowl's legal team last week fired off a letter to SIA, that's Sport Integrity Australia, demanding the ongoing investigation into the 800-metre runner be brought to an end. So that's an exclusive from Andrew Webster in The Age this morning. And as you mentioned, Peter Bowl will be live on the Today Show on Channel 9 this morning.
It's an interesting story. Well, it's a fascinating story, really, because according to these independent labs, and Dr. David D.Y. Chen, a professor in the Department of Chemistry at the University of British Columbia, nearly three decades of experience, I found that all the data was presented in two reports showed negative results for recombinant erythropoietin, or synthetic EPO, as it's commonly called. The gel images are distorted, making some of the protein spots appear to have larger molecular weights than the identical protein strains run from a separate line. It goes on to say that there's no possible trace of this in any of the samples tested. So it's a big blunder. It's a big blunder, Al, to have this happen to Peter Bowl. Of course, he's the poster boy for Australian athletics after his performance in the Olympics. The whole Sudanese community getting around him and what that does for multicultural Australia. He was a chance to take out Young Australian of the Year, and that was he was denied that opportunity on the back of this charge. There's a whole lot that could come on this, I reckon.
We spoke about the issue with netball the other day with the centre pass being unacceptable. This is next level.
Oh, well, because we were talking about at the back, the apprentice and I were talking about this, that as soon as you heard that there'd been an A sample positive, you go, ah, oh, bloody hell.
Mm.
It's just another cheat.
Yep.
So your natural reaction is to go, ah, oh, he's just a bloody cheat. So there's no sympathy, there's no empathy at all. And regardless of the fact that there's now some pretty concrete evidence that that was never the case, That still sits, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Which is horrible. It's a horrible way for Peter to have to walk around town to people thinking that he's, you know, maybe he was, maybe he just got away with it, whatever it might be. So it's a big story, this one. We might try and track him down and see if we can get a hold of him. I know he's doing the rounds on TV this morning, but we might try and track him down and see if we can get him. We'll see what we can do, but that is a big story.
The Socceroos suffered a 2-1 loss to Ecuador in front of 27,000 fans at Marvel Stadium last night. Let's hear from the gaffer Graham Arnold post-game.
Yeah, look, I think it was a great lesson. You know, you see how physically strong they were. I think they won the physical battle, and, you know, the kids, the young boys would have learned a lot tonight.
So they went up 1-0 but lost 2-1 in the end. I don't think there's any major cause for concern there after that?
I'll tell you the major cause for concern, Al. It's got nothing to do with what happened on the pitch. I couldn't find it last night. I couldn't find how to watch it.
It was on one of Channel 10's.
I've learnt this morning from the former Socceroo, which no surprise he knew where it was, being a former Socceroo. It was on 10 Bold.
Right.
I didn't get that deep into the 10s. I would have thought the national team playing at home gets the main channel. It goes to 10 HD. It goes to 110 on your Foxtel, whatever it is. Channel 10 on the old Rank Arena, or Channel 4 it might have been back in the old Rank Arena. Whatever it was, surely the national squad, if you're going to pay for the rights to have exclusive access to the national team, coming off a World Cup campaign of
yep.
great success and great energy and great momentum, and you put the Socceroos on 10 Bold. I don't know how to find 10 Bold.
On a Tuesday night
on
as well.
On a Tuesday night. Yeah. I did look. I was watching, trying to flick around, obviously. And NCIS was on.
Oh, yes.
On Channel 10. Sorry, what?
Yep. No, that's no good.
You got the Socceroos in Melbourne, the best sporting city in the planet, and you're putting it on 10 Bold. Could not find it. Gave up. Moved on. 1-300-652-927. If you were like me last night and couldn't find the Socceroos, or whether I'm just being a tool, let me know as well. Happy to cop that feedback between the eyes.
More football. Euro 2024 qualifiers we're playing at the moment, Daniel, of course. The big game we're following this morning is Scotland and Spain in Glasgow, and the home team are already one goal ahead after 28 minutes through McTominay. So Scotland 1, Spain 0 after 28 minutes in that one. Big news regarding Ben Simmons. He has been shut down for the rest of the season. So he will not suit up for the Nets for the remainder of the year.
He's the president of the Cotton Wool Club.
Yes, Jacques Vaughan, the Nets coach, said, I quote, "Ben will not be joining us for the rest of the year and through the playoffs. After consulting with our doctors and multiple specialists, he's going to begin a rehab program. Our doctors and specialists feel and think you'll have a full recovery, and that starts now."
It's been an amazing fall from grace.
Amazing and very disappointing.
Yeah, horribly disappointing, but just, but an amazing fall.
Yep.
Like Rookie of the Year, the biggest thing in...
Multiple All-Star,
yeah.
Defensive Player of the Year.
In the NBA, such a great story from our perspective, mm-hmm. you know, having a little bit of access to him and ownership of him, despite the fact that he doesn't give much to the national team. It's such a fall from grace. And I do wonder the genesis of it all. I wonder what was the trigger for the whole thing to come undone. Was it his mindset? Was it his relationships? Was it his incapacity to shoot?
Mm.
Was it, and the pressure that comes with that? Was it his teammates not copping him anymore from that sort of stuff? I wonder what it was that led to all of this. Now, there's injury, and you know, we don't wish anyone injury in the world of sport or anyone, full stop. But I just wonder what where it all came from, because it's a fascinating fall.
It is indeed. The Miami Open rolls on. Taylor Fritz and Jannik Sinner into the quarterfinals after respective straight sets wins. We've got live quarterfinals action and the women's side at the moment. Elena Rybakina versus Martina Trevisan of Italy. And Rybakina, the 10th seed, won the first set 6-3, and she's 5-0 up in the second. So it looks like she'll advance to the semi-finals there. And just lastly, the third T20 in Joburg happening as we speak. The Windies made 220 for the loss of 8 wickets from their 20 overs. And in reply, South Africa are 2 for 148. So they need 73 and 36 balls with 8 wickets in the shed. Looks like I reckon they'll get there.
Got there! As the great Tony Leonard might say. Calling football on another station, 3AW, which, of course, we don't call footy, so I can say that. Now, Channel 10. Daniel, an incompetent TV channel run by incompetent people. Terrible. And don't get me started on the rubbish that's on nightly at 6:30 on Channel 10. This is the Tarelgan Tiger. The next one in, that's Tarelgan Tiger's feedback. Channel 10 flagship show is a project. Says it all, mate. Regards to the Socceroos situation. And regards to Ben Simmons. It's the Kardashian curse.
Mm.
That was the origin of all evil for Ben Simmons. Now, I must admit, I don't know too much about that status. It was a, was it Kendall? Was it Kendall he was hanging out with for a bit? Or Kylie?
One of the Ks.
I don't know. There's lots of them. Anyway, it's been an amazing fall from grace. There is a story going around. Not a story. There's reports today from a conference in the Sport NXT conference, which I want to get my teeth into as well. Some amazing feedback from Michael Miller, the News Corp boss, who's the head of Foxtel and Fox Sports as well, which I want to touch on through the morning as well. There's been some interesting conversations and comments made by him in regards to the world of sport here in Australia.
Until 8:30, Daniel Harford and RSN's Breakfast with Harf.
Yeah, it is 20 past 6 on a Wednesday morning, and nice to have your company wherever you are listening. rsn.net.au, streaming on the web. Pressing the button on the app, download that at your app store, anywhere, anytime. The traditional wireless service in the car as well. Plenty of places you can get a hold of us. Just like David Noble. He'd be in the car. He'd be in the Dick Johnson racing car at the moment. He'd be going really fast around the track somewhere, I'm sure. He's now the CEO, did you know, of Dick Johnson Racing. It's Grand Prix week. The supercars are in action. It's going to be a busy week for the former North Melbourne coach, but he's given us some time this morning, which we think is pretty cool. Nobes, good morning.
Half, how are you going?
I'm going very well, mate. How's your world? Is it a bit high octane, high fuel, fast paced?
Yeah, it's been great. Been very refreshing. I've been a motorsport head all my life. I've just sort of been a closet one.
Well, now you've got to live it day to day. Is it what you thought it might be when you stepped into the role?
Yes, look, it's very similar. Well, there's a lot of similarities, mate, in regards to, you know, structure, environment. We only have the two athletes with Will and Anton, but so there's less athletes in your system. But as far as the structure of the organisation, yeah, it's quite similar. The departments are sort of comparable, I guess, if you like, across the sport. Different with private ownership to, you know, a board and governance by the AFL. But private ownership has been really exciting. Got some great owners that have shown some faith in me and, you know, Brett Ralph and Ryan Story and Dick, obviously. So, no, I've really enjoyed it. It's been really refreshing for me as an individual, mate.
So being involved in footy for so long and many, many roles through your time, Nobes, and then getting into a business like this, an organisation like this, which is still in sport, but probably doesn't have the energy day-to-day of a footy club where you're in, you know, everything's so intense and drilled towards the every separate weekend of the year. Is it difficult to adjust to that?
Not really, because our intensity is longer over a weekend. So we land yesterday, we've got, you know, we'll set up today, we've got breakfast with some of our key partners this morning, and then, you know, tomorrow we've got a full day of racing. Friday we race, Saturday we race, Sunday we race, so we don't end up heading home until Monday, some of us. Whilst I'm not necessarily on the tools, the intensity of the weekend is really long. So it's a little bit different. The intensity is there from, as you said, not necessarily week to week. But having said that, when the boys get the car back in a workshop, it's pulled apart.
Yeah.
You know, the intensity doesn't stop once we finish racing. The boys go back, there's adjustments, there's repairs. The engineers are back to work to try to find or improve engine capacity, how they're looking at the different aspects. The guys might have to repair some of the panels. So, yeah, the intensity is probably still there, but it's away from the track.
Yeah, okay, that's good insight. What's been the best part for you in this role?
Our new learnings, to be honest. You know, as a CEO, there's a lot of responsibilities from, you know, governance, compliance, learning, steep learning curve in regards to how, you know, Supercars operates, how we have a charter with Supercars, where the ownership and the connection with Ford, being able to, I guess, meet different people, you know, at a brand new level. You know, Andrew Berkey from Ford, who's the Ford CEO of Australia, you know, spending some time with Shane Howard and Mark Scope. So different connections, I think, and, you know, working with new owners, as I said, you know, guys that have been in the sport and have, you know, run private businesses like Brett for a long period of time successfully.
Does legacy come into the expectation and your mindset in this role? I mean, Dick Johnson is a legend of Australian sport, let alone motorsport. Does that legacy of that play a part in how you operate day to day and what in the back of your mind maybe?
100%. It's one of our core values of continuing the story. And it is an area that we are really conscious, you know, as an organisation, and we're lucky that Dick still comes to work, you know, most days. He's still in and around the shop and chats to the guys and has, you know, just unbelievable intel as far as his knowledge across the sport. But, you know, you could not meet a nicer person, honest, humble. You know, he's just such a, an encompassing individual that makes you feel so welcome in the organisation.
And your relationship with Will Davison and Anton Di Pasquale, you mentioned before Anton and Will, the two drivers for Shell V-Power Racing, your relationship with them, is it similar to a coach-player relationship or is it different?
It's different. It needs to be. I mean, I'll sort of try to just throw some subtle different ideas around. I mean, it would be silly to not use some of that experience, I think, in regards to bringing some different ideas across. You know, in that area, we're lucky because Will's such an experienced campaigner. He's been around and seen, you know, a lot of teams, drives really consistently. And Anton's, you know, still a young guy in the sport, learning his craft. So, you know, to have those conversations or some different ideas with those guys, I think it's been refreshing for them as well.
Yeah, great. That's a great insight. I saw you on 360 last night with Robbo and Jared talking about the Kangaroos' time and perhaps a bit more reflection or investigation should have gone into taking that role. Getting the chance to reflect when it's all said and done. Now, has that been cathartic for you or has it been a stress?
Oh, it's a lot of a mixed emotions, Huff, if I'm being, you know, brutally honest. It's, you know, it's an area that I feel probably the last 18 months doesn't really reflect my time in footy, you know, overall. That's been an interesting emotional ride that you sort of go on from that side. So, look, I've been a life learner all the way through. I've always tried to, you know, learn from things where I might not necessarily have got them right, particularly even internally. So it's been, look, refreshing to go back, take a step back. I was able to sort of look at the industry from afar, talk to other people in other sports that were really open to having just, you know, unique conversations to be able to work, you know, I guess around which direction I felt I would like to take.
And I did note with interest, I'm not sure if I heard it or read it in one of the articles today, that in the review that ultimately was the reason you were no longer coaching the Kangaroos, you didn't get to see that report. Why was that? Why has that been kept from you?
Don't know. don't know. It's,
having been a victim myself of a review of recent times, Nobes, I understand the situation, but...
I did hear that.
It happens to the best of us, mate.
It does. It does.
But would you like to see it?
I'm not sure now, to be honest. I think the time sort of passes and, you know, I've spoken to enough people that I trust and value who, you know, don't tell you the answer is what you want to hear, but I think I'm able to be or have worked out, I think, you know, some of the key areas. And look, I'm not sitting here thinking that, you know, it was not necessarily my fault. I've owned some of those areas. So I think that helps me move on in the sense that, yep, I've owned some areas. There were some potential issues that they saw. I've reflected on, you know, some of those items individually that I think, you know, may have been able to do better. So, look, I had my time. I'm grateful for the opportunity. It didn't work out. I've reset, had great support from some really close friends and particularly, you know, the family. And, yeah, I've gone back to doing some study and I've taken on a role in a, you know, of an administration role that I think, you know, I'm good at.
Would you do it again?
Probably under the right circumstances, yeah. Yeah, different circumstances, I think. But, I'm not one that tends to have regrets through life. I don't think that really serves any purpose. I think it's about you know, your experiences, what you learn, moving forward, continuing to seek improvement. I mean, it's how we brought up our kids. So you can't have those values and try to, you know, guide your children coming through and then not stand up for them yourself.
No, that's fair. It's a nice way to live, I reckon, moving forward and not worrying about too much what's happened in the past and the impact it's had. Although you are still involved, I think, on the AFL-CA and the Coaches Association board. And there's a back page story today from Jay Clark about the mental stress and strain coaches are still under from a soft cap perspective and also job security. 42% of coaches said their mental health was either average, poor or quite poor, while only 33% of the coaches said they can continue their current workload. How big is the strain on coaching these days?
Yeah, bigger than I probably expected, I think, overall. I mean, it's not till you're in the hot seat till, you know, it really comes to bear. I know the guys have... It's not the cash or the, you know, the monetary aspect that I think, you know, the coaches have been concerned around in regards to the soft cap, but I think it's the support levels and mechanisms that, you can put in place as a result of that. I know that has probably, there's no doubt there's been probably more for less in regards to your resource internally, I think, from a football environment. So, yeah, it's been pretty tough. It's a high-pressured senior executive role of an organisation where you could easily, in a week, you could easily have 25 high-calibre meetings, you know, from medical to individuals to reviews to previews, reviews. I mean, it sort of just keeps coming. The consistency of the level of intensity that it is in the hot seat is very, very regular.
If the scrutiny is increasing and the support's not coming along with it, that makes it a very challenging position, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's exactly right, mate. I didn't mention that, but you are. The intensity, I think, of the scrutiny. Coaches all know what you're in for, I think, from a level of intensity. Here, Melbourne is completely different to, you know, the interstate teams that I've been. I mean, Adelaide being there was really intense. Melbourne, I think, is up again from when I sort of worked here a long time ago with Bulldogs. And then interstate when I was with Fags at Brisbane was completely different. So the layers of, I think, where you are environmentally also add to that pressure. And I think depending on where your club's cycle is, adds another level of scrutiny as well.
Yeah, it's a good conversation, a fascinating conversation. We're probably spending a couple of hours on this, but we don't have the time this morning. You've got a breakfast to go to. Before I let you go, and I do appreciate your time, Nobes, so Will Davison, Anton Di Pasquale, will they be crossing the line first, getting the checkered flag on the weekend?
Well, that's the plan, mate. We were really disappointed and frustrated with Newcastle. So, yeah, the boys have been going pretty hard. We think we found some solutions to some of the little internal problems that we've had. But, yeah, we're really excited to get back out there and take our fans around the track this week and hopefully get on that podium.
Exciting new adventure, a great sport to be a part of. We can't wait to see how the boys go this weekend. Good luck with Dick Johnson Racing. Appreciate your time.
No worries. Thanks, mate. Anytime.
Victoria's statewide sports talk. On your radio, digital radio, the app and streaming. RSN's Breakfast with Half with Daniel Harford.
Yes, it is Wednesday morning action, not the SMS. Hang on, Half. Did Mindy McPherson change her surname as well? Sure, it's a family name, Sister Baker. That's a very good question. In the Baker, maybe Mimi was just riding the coattail of Sister Eleanor. The body is having a birthday today. It's a good question, though, Baker. Good question indeed. And this one, on the back of my exasperation of the Charlie Bellard situation, Half, I think you need a cup of tea and a bicky. You're a little cranky. Maybe that's right, too. Maybe that's right. Still to come on the program this morning, Isaac Smith's not too far away. Four-time premiership champ, Norm Smith medalist. And he wants to have father-son opportunities at the Cats on the back of his premiership, says Isaac. Have a chat about that. David Sinclair not too far away from the Ovens and Murray Footy League. The Wangaratta Magpies stripped of their flag last year. We're going to talk about that very, very shortly. Peter Moores, a former England cricket coach, is now the coach of the Melbourne Stars in the Big Bash. And Matty Stewart might have some more information on the Blake Shin situation, where he has returned a swab irregularity due to a sleeping tablet, so his statement said last night. And we'll hear more from Matty through the morning as well. 1-300-652-927 is the number to call to have your say on the world of sport. Remember our opportunity this week and every week on Breakfast to get a $500 Ross Faulkner pack for your local sporting club just by getting your voice on the radio. It's a pretty straightforward situation. It's pretty easy to do. Tell us what you think about the world of sport. And on Friday, we might call out your name and your local sporting club wins a $500 pack from our good friends at Ross Faulkner. Time now, though, for the big yarn.
On Breakfast with Half, it's the big yarn. Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down.
No, we'll never do that, Tom. Absolutely not. Mark Stevens joined us back in for this conversation, and fair enough, too, because he's got a great affinity with local community football and particularly country football, Stephen.
I do, Half, and certainly the Ovens and Murray haven't
backed down. You
love
the Ovens and Murray?
Well, they haven't backed down, have they? They've banned the Wangaratta Magpies, interestingly coached by Ben Reid, who's been a guest on this show last year.
A couple of times.
A draftee in Joe Richards to Collingwood. They've lost their flag, Half.
One of the biggest leagues in country football stripped its premiers of last year's flag for salary cap breach. Poor boy. The Ovens and Murray League made the call on Monday night, this story says, from Andrew Will in the paper today, to take the premiership from Wangaratta just a week after AFL North East border. The game's governing body in the region ruled the club could retain its flag despite going over the $125,000 salary cap. Did it by $28,000. Now, we've been able to track down David Sinclair, the chair of the Ovens and Murray Footy League, to give us a bit of clarity on this situation. It's a big story in community sport and country footy, and he's been good enough to join us this morning. David, thank you for your time.
Oh, thanks, guys. Good to be with you.
Great to have you on. This country footy is a big thing. It's a big talking point. It's a big part of life out there in the region. This country sport is. So this is a big decision from the Ovens and Murray Football League. And considering that the AFL North East Border said they could keep the premiership, and despite the $28,000 over the salary cap, you've decided to take it away. Why?
Look, it's a massive decision. It's been a brutal couple of days after 36 hours after this decision was made on Monday night. I haven't read anywhere or in their findings that AFL North East Border or the tribunal specifically said that they could keep their premiership. I believe that it was possibly on the table as part of the sanctions that Wangaratta were going to receive, and they chose not to go down that path, and but did give them a fine, and they can't play for points in their first two games, and they also operate with 36 points rather than the 40-point threshold that every other club operates under. So I don't know that they specifically said that they could keep their premiership.
Right, but then still, you've decided to take it away from them. What led to that?
Well, once the tribunal decision was so initially they were investigated. There were three charges laid. It went to a tribunal. And they were found guilty. So we as a board sat down on Monday night and looked at our bylaws to see whether they had breached any given that they were over the salary cap, whether they'd breached any of our bylaws. And yes, they had. we have a bylaw, as I'm sure most leagues would have, in our competition that speaks to clubs having to abide by the salary cap rules and the player points rules. And clearly they've breached that. We also have a bylaw that allows us to make it a decision as we see fit, depending on the severity of an offence. And we felt that integrity of the competition is everything. We needed to send a message to our other nine clubs, as well as community football in general, that integrity is everything, and we won't, we're not going to tolerate clubs that breach the salary cap. And in this instance, they happen to have won the premiership, so we thought the only fair and right thing to do was to decide that there would be no winner declared in 2022. We didn't give any thought to giving it to the club that they played against, but we've decided to strip them of the premiership and no winner will be declared in the Ovens of Murray for the 2022 season.
So, David, was it a matter of self-reporting, or how was it discovered in the end? Was it an investigation, or did they put up their hand and say, hang on, we have made a mistake?
Well, as a matter of course, the two sides that play in the grand final get investigated by a salary cap officer. They're not the only clubs that get investigated. They do investigate other random clubs through the year, but the two sides that made the grand final know that they're going to get investigated. So as a part of that, or going through that process, I think I'm not exactly sure how it unfolded, but Wangaratta certainly self-reported that they were over the cap during that investigation process. So it wasn't as if they self-reported and then the investigation officer came in and did the investigation. The investigation was underway before Wangaratta then self-reported that they had breached the cap.
And what's the response of Yarrawonga here? Are they saying, hang on, we got rolled by a few points, give us the premiership?
No, Yarrawonga have been fine. No, they're not looking to get the premiership. They didn't win it on the day and they don't expect it to get it, given that that this decision has been made. So, Yarrawonga have been fine. It's we really feel for the... This has taken a massive toll on the volunteers and players at Wangaratta Footy Club. But as I said, it's about integrity and ensuring all clubs are working under the same rules, under the same salary cap, and it's about integrity and ensuring that everyone stays within the rules.
David Sinclair's joined us, the chair of the Ovens and Murray Football League, after the board decided to strip Wangaratta of its 2022 premiership over a salary cap breach. Just a broader conversation on that, David. How's it going? How's the salary cap going in community football and the points cap as well? I mean, is it because the idea, I think, at the time was to redistribute the wealth to in terms of player quality to many clubs to have a more balanced and even competition. Is it working?
Look, we believe that it is. That's not to say that it couldn't be working better. Clearly, from where we sit as a board and how clubs trade with the league in terms of payments they need to make to the league for umpires, etc. Pre-salary cap days, we had clubs that were going onto payment plans because they just couldn't keep up with their match day payments. Now, pretty much all of our clubs are trading with the league within 30 days. So from what we're seeing, clubs are clearly trading better and are able to make ends meet much better. There's certainly still a question mark around third-party payments. You'd be a fool to think that there are not clubs out there that the old brown paper bag's not going under the table to certain players.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that happens not only within the Ovens and Murray League, but I'm sure in other leagues.
Every league.
In this instance, I'm not suggesting that there was as many brown paper bags going under the table at Wangaratta, but they got caught. Other clubs at this stage haven't been detected, and if they are and if they're investigated and found to have breached the cap, then obviously if they haven't won the premiership, we can't take that off them. But that they would be getting a hefty fine off controlling body and the Ovens of Murray would be applying sanctions as well. But for country football, community footy, the player points is the equivalent of our draft, and allowable player payments is the salary cap. The competition, the O&M competition prior to these two tools coming in, we had real issues around the unevenness of the competition. I think Albury won or played off in 10 grand finals in a row, winning seven. So clearly, at that point, there were issues in our competition. But you know, last year is the most even competition that we've had. Going into the final or the last round of the season, we had seven clubs that could still make finals. We got to the finals. There were six finals played. Four of them were decided by 5 points or less, including the grand final. So, you know, we think that it's working. Could it work better? Yes, it could. But I think there'd be a lot more clubs going under if there wasn't a salary cap. And I don't want to waffle on too long, but what was happening in the past was a club and might have been spending, say, 400K to put their site on the ground, and that's some of the figures that were getting bandied around that Ovens and Murray clubs were spending. And you've got and other clubs were trying to raise this sort of money to keep up with them, and it was just burning people out, burning committees out. So there was this massive churn of people trying to raise money to keep up with those that could pay this sort of money, and it was hurting country footy. And clearly, the salary cap and the player point system has helped that, and certainly evened up our competition. And I think, to a degree, you know, Steve, you're a Shep boy. You know, I think similarly over in the Golden Valley League, it started to even up that competition as well.
Yeah, no doubt. And congratulations on your final series, so close. David, what does this mean for, say, Ben Reid, such a respected footy figure? I mean, how hard would he have taken this? And how does the club recover? I mean, is the club split? Are they going to struggle now for numbers? Is it sort of taking the wind out of them completely?
Well, it's been brutal, Steve, on Wangaratta. I know that they're reeling, both their players, their volunteers. I can tell you, yesterday was one of the toughest days I've had in my life. Some of the cop that some of the flack that I cop from people within the club was quite unbelievable. And look, I get it. It's raw. It's a massive decision. They play their first game, ironically, against Wangaratta Rovers on Good Friday. So, you know, I hope that they can band together and make sure that they give a great account of themselves in 2023. But, you know, I'm sure Rudy will be disappointed that at the moment they're sort of pointing the finger at the league. I'm sure once that raw emotion goes away, they might start looking inward. But it's been tough for Wangaratta. There'd be a lot of people in that club at the moment, as there is within our league after we've made this decision. You know, mental health is massive at the moment, and there would be a lot of people around within the competition that would be struggling with that at the moment.
It's a big story in community sport, no doubt about it. Wouldn't have been easy to be a part of it, as you were articulating there, David. We appreciate you giving us some clarity on how it all unfolded and how we got to this point. We appreciate it. Thank you very much.
No worries. Thanks, Daniel. Thanks, Steve. See you, mate.
Ovens and Murray Football League chair.
A tough position for David to be in. You can imagine, like, he's in Albury Wodonga, head down to Wangaratta. Tough. You know, you can just imagine the vitriol coming his way. He's just doing his job.
Yes, but sort of what I was getting to about the salary cap and the points thing too, that the extra strain on local sporting bodies, like, not equipped to be dealing with investigations and forensic accounting of clubs' affairs to identify breaches and, you know, tracking people down with bloody paper bags, or the truck of white goods rocks up at your best player's house. This sort of rocks up. You didn't order them, but it rocks up and all that sort of stuff. Like, there's many ways that you can skin a cat in terms of reward players or pay players for performances in local sport, and that's been happening for years. And as David said, like, it'd be naive to think that it's not happening to a degree everywhere.
I'd imagine they would lean on AFL Victoria and have dialogue with them.
Yeah, they do. They do, but still, I mean, even AFL, there's a lot of competitions out there playing footy, a lot of leagues play footy, and you've still got to forensically analyse to try and level the playing field as much as you can. It's a strain on resources and good people who are trying to help and run sporting competitions. And good people out there doing great things and giving people a chance to compete and be a part of something pretty cool, a sense of belonging, which is what sporting clubs are for lots of people out there, week in, week out. It's a place to go and hang out and forget about the worries of the world for a couple of hours a weekend. Like, they're important things, and we're asking a lot of administrators and officials, a lot, who get bugger off to do it.
You can feel the toll there. You can sense it. David Sinclair, big ruckman at Shep East, he was. Good fella.
Was he?
Yep.
Did you play with him?
No, I was in the thirds. He was in the twos.
You're in the thirds,
all the
Shep
others,
East?
Under 17s.
Wasn't even Shep. Was Shep East?
I went out to the minor leagues.
Well, we continue the footy conversation right now. In fact, with the Norm Smith medalist and the four-time premiership star. Three of those with the Hawks. One of those with the rampaging Cats last year, of course. That only fits one description. That's one description. It suits Isaac Smith, who's about to join us. He's here with us right now, in fact. Isaac, are you on the line?
Half, how are you?
Hey, there he is. Nice to have you with us, mate. I'm well. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Well, looking forward to daylight savings ticking over because I'm sick of these dark mornings.
Well, it doesn't exactly become like the Bahamas when daylight savings finishes.
I don't know how you're handling it. It'll be pitch black at 4 a.m.
She's a bit dark, but that's all right. That's all right, because then we get the good stuff at the back end of the day. That's all right. Hey, I must admit, I was looking at the AFL ladder this morning, trying to find out where Geelong were. I had to go really deep at the moment.
Oh, don't do that to yourself.
Zipping two, which is clearly a long way from being disaster, but has it created a bit of an edge down the Cats, or is it smooth sailing still?
Yeah, well, it's probably been it's probably been a good thing. It's not a great thing because we'd prefer to be 1-1 or 2-0, but it certainly does make you sharpen yourself up a little bit and probably look at things more deeply than what you'd probably otherwise do. So, yeah, it was disappointing. I think we realised that we were going to have certain things going on at the start of the season, especially with some new guys that we brought in, and we're missing a little bit of personnel as well. So we were probably under no illusions that it was going to be an easy start to the season, especially playing Collingwood and Carlton at the MCG in big games straight up as well. So although it's disappointing, we feel like we've had two really good hit-outs. We certainly haven't been playing anywhere near our best, which is quite exciting. And we get a chance to go to the Gold Coast this week and hopefully put a win on the board.
When you've been to the top of the mountain, and you've been there four times, which is many, many more times than most of your teammates, how difficult is it to get back up again and start it all again and fight for that moment again? Is it easy because you've been there and you know what it tastes like and feels like and it's worth striving for? Or is it hard because you've been there and done that?
Well, I think you'd have to ask the individual. Personally, I quite enjoy the challenge of trying to win them and getting there. But I think, yeah, it can be, for certain individuals, it can be difficult, especially if that's been a goal of theirs and that's their ultimate goal. I think you hear a lot in psychology around the world, once you reach a goal, then you have to take some time to sort of sit back, reset and evaluate and see what the next thing is. But, yeah, it doesn't feel like... if anything, it feels like the guys are probably more hungry because they've been there, they've felt it, and they want to achieve it again.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's an interesting take. You're probably right. Probably have to ask each individual. And for you, I mean, you talked about loving the chase and loving the challenge of getting back out there. You've experienced some great things in your footy career. Was this one as good as it's been, that premiership? I know we discussed it late last year, but is it still sort of lingering, that moment?
As good as it's been, I'm not sure. I think there was a little bit of emotion around it. One, we had a death in the family, but two, I think it was a massive call for myself and my wife to decide to pack up and leave Hawthorn and move down to Geelong. And there were a lot of reasons around that. And we took a little bit of a risk and a little bit of a punt. And I guess you feel a sense of achievement and accomplishment, and you've made a decision, and there's been an element of success around that as well. So, yeah, there was plenty of factors that made it a pretty special day, and forever thankful that it occurred, and it'd be nice for it to happen again.
Yeah, I'm sure it would. And it's still very much in the offing. The next 3 weeks look pretty good to me, but we'll get to that shortly. Just on what you've seen so far from the team, you mentioned some personnel out, which is absolutely right. I mean, Tom Stewart, College Jasny, Mitch Duncan across halfback as well. So that most of your defence is under the pump. What have you seen so far that's an area of growth for you in the first couple of weeks, do you reckon?
I think we've played, well, we brought, and it was pretty well publicised that we brought in Jack Burrows from Gold Coast, Turner Brewer from GWS, and Ollie Henry from Collingwood.
Yep.
And Burrows is a little bit older, but the other two are still very young and very raw in their football careers. So I think we'll see a little bit of growth happen there just naturally once they learn the way we play and understand how we want them to play and how they can help sort of our system. So that's exciting. Joel's obviously stepped away, so we've seen some growth in other guys stepping up there. And I just think there's probably a little bit of natural growth to occur anyway, because even though, yeah, we had a very old list, you had guys like, well, Tyson Stengel hadn't played a hell of a lot of footy with us. Sam DeConning was having a huge impact on the competition late last year, and he'll continue to. So we've got some guys that don't have much footy under their belt as well. And I think that's exciting for the footy club. So, yeah, there's a little bit of growth to happen this year. Hopefully we can get back and start playing the footy we're playing like we were towards the end of last year.
Some of the numbers are suggesting that defensively is where the biggest challenge is for the Cats at the moment. We saw you last year defend unbelievably and then attack, and the whole competition's come with you on this attack mindset, which is great for the spectators. Is that the biggest area of concern at the moment, the defensive capability of the squad?
Yeah, well, it's funny. Defensively, yeah, and you missed Jack Henry when you were sort of naming the list of defenders before as well. But, yeah, defensively, yeah, we've got a bit of work to do. But I think if you ask any coach, defence and offence all tie in together. And I don't think we've probably been moving the ball we'd like to. We certainly haven't been winning it as much as we want to. And we've probably been giving possession to the opposition a hell of a lot more than we want to. And then when your defence is undermanned by four players, then you start to see cracks start to open up. So, yeah, we think if we can do some better things around the ball and actually move the ball a little bit better, then our defence will be in a better position just naturally. It'll give us more time to set up. So, yeah, it's funny. We are leaking a few more points than what we'd like, but we think there's some easy fixes there if we can sort a couple of other things out.
Norman Smith, medalist Isaac Smith from the Cats, is joining us on Breakfast on a Wednesday morning. Can I ask you about Jeremy Cameron? I think his performance the other night was off the charts. I think he's the best player in the competition. When did you work out he's a really good player?
Well, I was fortunate enough to play against Jezza for a long time, and I think it was pretty obvious that he was one of the best players in the competition, but he was off Broadway. He was in Western Sydney, and now he's landed in Geelong. I think the competition is truly seeing the true Jeremy Cameron. And we see a lot of great players up at GWS, but it must be difficult for them when they're not playing in front of those big crowds. And Jeremy's certainly one that his performance lifts. The bigger the crowd, the more energy you feel in the stadium. And yeah, Friday night he was off the charts. He was awesome. And I've been fortunate to play with a few good forwards in my career, and Jeremy's right up there.
Yes, he's pretty. What about the other big one? How's Big Tomahawk going? Is he? I mean, he had an interesting off season. That foot injury was keeping away from training from a fair bit. It was a sluggish start. Is he going to be okay, the big fella?
Yeah, he'll be fine. I think, as everyone knows in footy, if you can't sort of smash out a pre-season, then you're going to be a little bit behind the eight ball early. And yeah, poor Hawk wasn't able to do a lot of the footy stuff during the season. So I think you'll see his touch and his fitness levels rise over the next couple of weeks. And he's still been, I think I saw a stat the other day, he's still in the top three or four in the competition for score involvements, which he usually leads most years. So yeah, if you're going off that, he's dropped off a couple of percent, but I think we all expect him to be back to his best pretty soon.
Yep, well, the Cats fans love to see that. Two pretty handy players, Cameron and Hawkins in the forward half for the Cats. How are you going? How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. Moving around okay. Getting getting a kick still. The day I stop getting a kick will be the day I stop playing. So I'm getting older, so you never know.
You don't look it. You're looking pretty good to me, so that's all positive. So just keep going. You've had some conversations the last couple of weeks. You had your 50th game for the Cats last week, and you were talking about father-son opportunities and rules about that. You've had, what sort of feedback have you had about the premiership rule?
Yeah, it's been a little bit 50-50, maybe 70-30 against it. That's just jealousy of the clubs that haven't won them. No, I think I've always just had that thought that I love the romance in footy and love that, like, at the moment, you see at Collingwood, you see the Dacos brothers, and that's pretty special. And there is, and as much as maybe people hate to admit, there is a difference between a player that's played 50 games for a club and hasn't won a premiership or a player that has played 50 and won a premiership. You're probably forever connected and forever entwined in the history of the football club. So I just threw it out there as a bit of a discussion point, and I think it made it a few conversations over the next couple of days. I think that's the beauty of footy. You get to sit back and listen to people's opinions. Do I truly believe it should happen? No, but is it an interesting discussion? And is something that could happen in the future? Yeah, maybe. But I think footy's not a bad thing just to sit back. Everyone's got an opinion. Everyone picks their top eight at the start of the year. So, yeah, it's interesting. I would love to see it happen. Where am I saying my kids will ever play AFL footy? No, but I just love the romance of seeing ex-players' kids play for the football club that their parents played for.
So hang on a second. You're telling me you're throwing grenades and dropping bombs and just watching everyone scatter and just run for their life and not really worrying about the result. Is that what you're telling me?
I don't think this comment had a huge issue of what the result was going to be.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. Only you can say that to get away with it. The other big topic in footy at the moment are the sling tackles and the bumps. We've seen some unbelievable scenarios in the first couple of weeks of the season, and this is on the back of the whole conversation around head trauma and the effect it's having on players presently but also in the future as well. What's the conversation like within the walls of the Cats? Does Chris lead this conversation about looking after each other? Is it a player-led conversation, considering you got the president of the PA in your team, the captain of your club, Paddy Dangerfield? What's the conversation sound like?
Yeah, well, to be honest, there's not a hell of a lot of conversation around specific incidents or certain things that are occurring in the game. It's more the broader conversation, and this has been led by Michael McDeese at the AFL, but also the Players Association around player safety, and safety certainly around players' heads. So we're seeing a hell of a lot of information now pop up in the news. And as a player, this information's been fed to us over the last few years that this is only going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think the conversation sort of, if broadly speaking, goes around the sense of players just having more of a duty of care on how they attack the ball or an opposition player, or even the way they go about a technique, certainly one thing that being coached with these scenarios as well. So you are seeing now where probably back in your day, half, it was more about how much pain and how much injury can you inflict on the opposition. It's more you're there to win the ball and you're there to win the game, but you certainly have a duty of care to the opposition that's out there.
Yeah, well, and there's no doubt about that. The times have changed, and for many and varied reasons, and for the better, it must be said, the way that the game is carrying itself these days. But I have been surprised by some of the incidents we've seen so far in the first 2 weeks. Hopefully we don't see too many more of them. A couple of things for you off topic. Night grand final, you're the best. Are you the only four-time premiership player currently playing in the competition? Are you the man to talk about when we talk about grand finals?
Oh, I haven't done the numbers, but I think so.
Yeah, I think you might be. So the only one really to talk to about these things, the grand final is a night grand final or a day grand final. The AFL still don't know what they're doing with that. What do you think?
You know what I genuinely think?
Yeah?
I think they should do whatever the best spectacle is for the game. because that's the best opportunity and the biggest opportunity to grow the game.
Is that for the fans or is that for the TV?
I think it's both. I just think you've got to do what's best for the game. I think Twilight would be good because you'd get awesome halftime moment where it's darkening up and you can do a pretty cool show, especially with now lighting and all the stuff that entertainment people are able to do. So I just think you do whatever the best spectacle is. And I'm sure the AFL have got data and information on that. So I certainly don't have a preference, to be honest. I really enjoyed the Gabba Grand Final that was at night. I thought that was a very cool spectacle.
Yep.
I also love the day game and love that you can rock up and the sun's shining. So as a player, I certainly don't have a preference. As a fan, I think the AFL should just do what the best spectacle is for the game and what's the best opportunity to grow the game.
Righto. And last one before I let you go. If Ash Hansen, who's the senior assistant at Carlton, worked for Fox Footy and they were covering Geelong and Richmond, would you allow, or would you think Geelong would allow Ash Hansen in the rooms prior or post-game?
To be honest, Harp, where the family stand, I don't think there's any information that anyone's going to get. I always find it very amusing, whether it's our club that stop people coming in or not, or whether it's others. I just think there's not a hell of a lot that's shown where all the family is standing after the game. I can hardly hear when I'm in there as a player because there's that many people in there talking. So, to be honest, it's a power move clubs can pull. Would I pull it if I was in charge? Probably not.
Fair enough. Well, you've got work to do this week. You've got the Gold Coast up at Metricon Stadium, 210 Heritage Bank. Sorry, not Metricon, Heritage Bank Stadium in Queensland, 210 on Sunday.
They got good interest rates at the moment.
Oh, I don't know. You'll have to ask them when you get up there. I love how you're worried about the interest rates.
They call themselves Heritage Bank because they're back.
Back in 1960?
10 years ago or 5 years ago? Or what's the go?
Well, maybe they're Heritage pre the 10 consecutive interest rate rises, Isaac. We'll see. You can find out for us and report back to us.
Hopefully it's not Heritage late 80s, early
90s. No, we don't want the 80s ones at 19%. We don't want them. But we want to see you out there winning games for the Cats. We wish you the best of luck this week. Always a pleasure to have you on. Don't forget to turn your clock back an hour.
Thanks, Alf. Good to have a chat.